Well, certainly is a blessing to be here today. We do find many traditions, some good, some bad. Today I'd like to talk to you specifically about head coverings, the good and bad traditions thereof. We find Paul, the Apostle Paul, spending quite a bit of time in the New Testament in a section of one chapter, 1 Corinthians chapter 11. And I think it's appropriate that we go to that and see how he premises that, what he starts out saying. So 1 Corinthians 11, verse 1. Be imitators of me, just as I also am of Messiah. Now I praise you because you remember me in everything and hold firmly to the traditions, just as I delivered them to you. The Apostle Paul starts out saying that he is an imitator of Messiah. And I think we should all be imitators of Messiah. Indeed, he is here among us as two or three are gathered together, but in the body, in Messiah, within the temple today, which is us, he lives. And we have rivers of flowing water, speaking of the Spirit. But the Apostle Paul starts out saying that he is an imitator of Messiah. Did the Messiah wear a tallit, a prayer shawl? Or did Paul, when coming before Yahweh in worship? We see these images on the big screen and in other video productions during worship. So are they correct? What does Scripture say? A good portion of 1 Corinthians chapter 11 takes up the subject of head coverings. That is, head coverings, both good and bad. When Paul talks about holding firmly to traditions that he delivers to the brethren, is he speaking of things that are right or wrong according to Scripture? 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, 13 through 15. We should always give thanks to Yahweh for you, brethren, beloved by the Master, because Yahweh has chosen you from the beginning for salvation through sanctification by the Spirit and faith in the truth. It was for this he called you through our evangel, that you may gain the glory of our Master Yahshua the Messiah. So then, brethren, stand firm and hold to the traditions which you were taught, whether by word of mouth or by letter from us. Well, it certainly seems or appears that Paul is speaking about tradition that is right and true according to the Spirit of Yahweh and the faith, or which is also faithful to the truth of his word. And so many times we hear of Paul being belittled or bashed because he seems to be out of sync, at least in some minds, with the law of Yahweh. But he's not out of line. He's not out of line with Yahweh's Spirit either. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verses 6 through 13. Now we command you, brethren, in the name of our Master Yahshua the Messiah, that you keep away from every brother who leads an unruly life, and not according to the tradition which you receive from us. Again, what tradition? For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example, because we did not act in an undisciplined manner among you, nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it. But with labor and hardship we kept working night and day so that we would not be a burden to any of you. Not because we do not have the right to do this, but in order to offer ourselves as a model for you, so that you would follow our example. For even when we were with you, we used to give you this order: if anyone is not willing to work, then he is not to eat either. For we hear that some among you are leading an undisciplined life, doing no work at all, but acting like busybodies. Now such persons we command and exhort in the Master Yahshua, Messiah, to work in quiet fashion and to eat their own bread. But as for you, brethren, do not grow weary of doing good. So the Apostle Paul is making a separation of what's right versus what's wrong. What is correct behavior versus what's wrong behavior? But what did he initially start out with in 1 Corinthians 11? It was follow me or imitate me as I imitate the Messiah. He's living the life according to the way the Messiah lived his life. And we know that his life was sinless. Living a peaceful life in Messiah, setting a good example, doing the right things, and following their example is they follow Messiahs. We know that the Messiah didn't sin, but he did not just not sin. He walked in a blameless spiritual way, walking on higher ground. We've talked about this before. If Yahshua magnified the law by emphasizing deeper spiritual aspects of them and living and teaching the correct way of Yahweh, do you think it would not also be done by those who have Yahshua within them? Of course. What, though, was Paul going after in this chapter of 1 Corinthians 11? What do we see here? 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3. I want you to understand, don't make any mistake about this, that Messiah is the head of every man, and the man is the head of a woman, and Yahweh is the head of Messiah. Pretty clear. It's not a parable. It's not anything that can really be confused. It's clear that there is a proper order and way that Yahweh has established, which Paul sees. He sets the example for what he is about to say, which is 1 Corinthians 11:4. Every man who has something on his head while praying or prophesying disgraces his head. It's shameful. It's disgraceful. It's not right. But don't we see this very thing practiced today among some? What did Paul mean by saying it disgraces a man's head if he does wear something on his head while worshiping? He answers the question in verse 7. For a man ought not to have his head covered, since he is in the image and glory of Elohim. So he gives us the answer. Paul had his mind on Scripture, didn't he? In the image of Elohim, man was created. Having a hat or cap or any type of covering in worship for a man in Messiah is not acceptable. Paul is speaking plainly about this. There's nothing to be confused about it. And it is in keeping line with the order of headship, which is revealed. He continues to elaborate, starting again at the beginning of verse 7. 1 Corinthians 11:7. For a man ought not to have his head covered, since he is the image and glory of Elohim, but the woman is the glory of man. For man does not originate from women, but woman from man. For indeed man was not created for the woman's sake, but woman was for the man. What man in Scripture was allowed to wear a head covering? The high priest, Aaron, chosen of the Levites, was to be in that position. And of course, we see Yahshua in such a position today as high priest, but not under the Levitical order. Rather, Yahshua is a high priest in the Melchizedek order. Question. Since those of Messiah are referred to as priest, as a priesthood and a priestly nation, should we not wear head coverings like Aaron's sons? Because Aaron's sons wore head coverings, and they were a priesthood. We're under a new priesthood. What do we say about this? What did Peter say? 1 Peter 2:9. But you are a chosen priest, chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for Yahweh's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Are we really priests right now? He's pulling from different areas of Scripture, prophecy that has been foretold. Are we first fruits? Are we right now? It's a question to ask. Let's back up to verse 4 and 5 to get context. 1 Peter 2:4 through 5. And coming to him as to a living stone which has been rejected by men, but is choice and precious in the sight of Yahweh, you also, as living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house for a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to Yahweh through Yahshua the Messiah. It is our destiny. If we overcome to the end in Messiah, to rule with him as a kingdom of priests invited to sit on his throne. We certainly don't sit on his throne right now. And we have not been resurrected. We have not been changed, as Paul describes in the twinkling of an eye. We are not sitting on high. There is an order that we are to follow right now. But the prophecies are in place, and it will happen. There will be first fruits, and there will be a kingdom of priests ruling with Yahshua. This is what we're striving for. Think of it this way. Yahshua didn't become a high priest until he was raised as a first fruit. The parallel is for us today, if we overcome as he did. And he says, be of good cheer, because he overcame the world. And he gives us encouragement that we can as well. But the fact remains, we haven't yet. So we are, we should ask the question, so do we wear a yarmulke or beanie skull cap today as some do? It's not proper to do so. And Paul knew it. And that's why he said plainly, it's not proper for men in the faith to have their heads covered. It's just not right. It's a shameful thing. Was Paul adamant about these traditions for those in Messiah? 1 Corinthians 11:16. He says basically, look, if one is inclined to be contentious, to be argumentative, to make a big stink about this, we have no other practice, nor have any of the other assemblies of Yahweh. And he knew what the other assemblies were doing. He traveled. He established some. He set up Titus and Timothy to delegate and make sure that things were done proper and right according to Scripture. And so this is where we find ourselves today, striving to do what is proper and right according to Scripture and according to the traditions that are proper in Scripture to do. So where did this wrong tradition of men covering their heads come from? Here's a quote from William Smith, a school dictionary of Greek and Roman antiquities. Any piece of felt, especially a skull cap of felt, a hat, from the Greeks, who were acquainted with this article as early as the age of Homer, the Greek poet. The use of felt passed together with its name to the Romans. Its principal use was to make coverings of the head for the male sex, and the most common one was a simple skull cap. So what did that look like? Well, it looks exactly like what we see today. And since Homer was mentioned, the ancient poet, we have a coin here from the 4th century BCE, sometime before the 1st century. And you'll notice on his head there, looks like a little yarmulke, a beanie. But what it is actually a strap that is up there. And we can kind of see how the tradition has come over, but we see this in comparison to what a beanie looks like today. And even in the design, you have something similar. But early traditions from pagan societies took its toll on proper worship, as we see from historical documents, such as is found in the Book of Maccabees. An account here of an Antiochus Epiphanes, who had placed Jason in a position of high office to change the normal ways of worship. 2 Maccabees 4:10-15. When the king assented, speaking of Antiochus Epiphanes, so this is like around 170 CE, I think, common era. When the king ascended and Jason came to office, he at once shifted his compatriots over to the Greek way of life. Of course, we already read Greeks wore these caps, skull caps, as well as did the Romans. Verse 11, he set aside the existing royal concessions to the Jews secured through John, the father of Epolemus, who went on the mission to establish friendship and alliance with the Romans, and he destroyed the lawful ways of living and introduced new customs, new traditions, essentially, contrary to the law. He took delight in establishing a gymnasium right under the citadel, and he induced the noblest of young men to wear the Greek hat. There was such an extreme Hellenization an increase in the adoption of foreign ways because of the surpassing wickedness of Jason, who was unrighteous and no true high priest, that the priests were no longer intent upon their service at the altar. Despising the sanctuary and neglecting the sacrifices, they hurried to take part in the unlawful proceedings in the wrestling arena after the signal for the discus throwing. Interesting. So there's a type of priesthood that was still trying to function even after the temple was destroyed. And they had an altar and they were offering up sacrifices. Interesting. Someone addressed that issue with me here some time ago because I've said basically the scholars kind of argue among themselves whether or not there's going to be a physical temple or, you know, like with stone, or something temporary like a tabernacle. Well, here they were just using an altar. So they just set up an altar and started doing sacrifices. So it's interesting. But I think as we take a look at prophecy and you know, the man of sin going into the Holy of Holies, I don't think that's the man of sin going into us, which is described by some. The reason I say that is because Yahweh's spirit and evil don't mix. Satan can't come into us, not if Messiah is there. So I just share that with you. But it's a tradition that the Jews hold on today, these little caps that they wear. You can't even go to the Wailing Wall without someone handing you the traditional yarmulke to wear. Many synagogues today, I understand, will also not allow you to come into worship with them unless you wear the skull cap. Now, while we normally never quote Talmud, which is full of wrong traditions, we do see a historical picture, and we can get a sense of what is happening back to at least the second century of the Common Era. And having already seen what Paul wrote, some men may have already been coming into worship wearing Greek skull caps, because that was going around evidently after Homer, sometime before the first century. Remember, this was at Corinth, 48 miles from Athens. Paul went to the Gentiles and they were coming to learn, but some had traditions that were wrong and they needed to be taught. Similar to the situation we find ourselves in today, a society filled with wrong traditions. And we let people know wrong from right, truth from error, pagan ways versus Yahweh's way. Here we have a quote from the Talmud, just giving a historical reference here. Men sometimes cover their heads and sometimes not. But women's hair is always covered, and children's are always bareheaded. This appears to show that head coverings for Jewish men was an optional thing to do, at least in public. But women always had their hair or head covered. The Latin scholar Tertullian also noticed, and it looks like he made a snide remark about it here in this quote, among the Jews, so usual is it for their women to have their head veiled that they may thereby be recognized. Like they're showing off. But that's not the case. Of course, the Pharisees went around making a show of their tassels, which were in the law, but as training wheels to get the people to stay on the right track and obey the commandments. The reason for the head coverings for women, however, was a modest tradition. But as Paul points out in 1 Corinthians 11, it goes deeper than that. And he is so wanting to make the point that he basically says that a woman who doesn't wear a head covering should shave her head. It's that disgraceful of a thing, he pointed out, to not wear a head covering during services. For women, that is. For the men, it was the opposite. 1 Corinthians 4:4-6. Every man who has something on his head while praying or prophesying disgraces his head. But every woman who has her head uncovered while praying or prophesying disgraces her head. For she is one and the same as the woman whose head is shaved. That's a disgraceful thing. This essentially is what he's saying. Verse 6. For if a woman does not cover her head, let her also have her hair cut off. But if it is a disgraceful Or if it is disgraceful for a woman to have her hair cut off or her head shaved, let her cover her head. He's basically directing and saying to the women and telling them, so you think that shaving your head is disgraceful? Then by all means, put a head covering on, because if you don't, it's just as disgraceful as shaving your head and coming here to worship. It's almost as if he was upset by seeing what was going on. And he gives connection to these different ideas to make a point. Now, if we were in Jerusalem today, we'd see many women, not just Jewish women, wearing head coverings. It's really not that different, I don't think, than what was probably happening in the first century. Though our records really only go back to around the second century. But it shows some common ground there, and I looked through a number of commentaries, a lot of them, and they all seem to have the common understanding that head coverings was typically seen. Here's 1,000 Bible images by the German Bible Society. It says women commonly wore a veil in the entire Mediterranean during antiquity. Depending on the region and dress, the veil more or less covered the hair. Paul ordered women to wear a veil during prayer. Now we have another image here that is from a Roman catacomb, basically a burial area, of a woman in a worship position with her hair covered. This goes as far back as the second century, maybe even a little earlier. Now the Catholics have this custom today, and it is evidence that head covering for women throughout the Mediterranean, the Middle East area, were commonly seen with head covering. It was commonly done. And since the Catholics had a very anti-Semitic viewpoint, it would go out of their way to make sure they didn't do anything Jewish. I think we do see it was common among the other, Greek, Rome, the women there. But if modest women in other cultures were doing the same, then they certainly had no trouble accepting what Paul said in the letter to those at Corinth. Jewish scholars do see a need for women to wear head coverings not because of what Paul said, but because of instructions found in Numbers 5:18. Priests were to follow certain instructions to find out whether or not a husband's suspicions are correct about an unfaithful wife. Numbers 5:18, this is taken from Young's literal translation. And the priest hath caused the woman to stand before Yahweh, and hath uncovered the woman's head, and hath given into her hands the present of the memorial. It is a present of jealousy. In the hand of the priest are the bitter waters which cause the curse. Some translations say basically that her hair was let down. I think it's safe to say that Young's literal translation has it correct, saying that she had her hair covered. This is different than having a veil on the face. But going back further in time, we see a veil on the face was not unusually done unless one wanted to be stealthy and unknown. What do I mean by that? Genesis 38:15. When Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot, for she had covered her face. Literally covered up her face. Now, there are questions as to what this covering... This is an account of Judah and Tamar, and she was evidently trying to look the part of a discreet prostitute. So this is something that was done at that time. But let's go back further. Going back even further, we see Isaac's wife to be, she seems to be covering herself up so as to be more modestly presentable to her future husband, man she knew she was going to be married to. Genesis 24:65. She said to the servant, "Who is that man walking in the field to meet us?" And the servant said, "He is my master." Then she took her veil and covered herself. Now it doesn't say she covered her face. It doesn't say she just covered her, shoulders. It just says she covered herself. So we have scripture saying, you know, well, some covered their face, some covered, just covered. But there are specific ones that are saying that the women had their head covered. And Paul is specifically addressing that. He's not just telling the women, just cover up. He's not telling them, cover your face. He's telling them about head coverings. And in the alternative way, he's telling the men, don't cover your head. He's not talking about their face. He's not talking about their shoulders. He's talking about a specific thing. If we think of this as being a modest gesture or even a betrothal tradition, then we most likely have a good sense of why she covered herself in front of him. While our Western society doesn't normally wear head coverings other than hats, it is a clear tradition for women who were in Jerusalem, and even the Israelites who have been brought back into the land are now doing this. It may be a door open for them to see us as believers in Messiah according to the tradition that they keep. And while we don't do many traditions, Paul said this one has spiritual significance, which involves the heavenly realm. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 10. Therefore, the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels. Now, interestingly enough, it could be that this verse is not saying what we think it says. When we take a closer look at 1 Corinthians 11:10, we'll look at the New American Standard Bible here, and we've highlighted a couple things: authority, also symbol of, and of course, he's specific in saying on her head. But the wording symbol of is added by the translator to try to give clarity. But the following commentary makes an interesting observation, and that's the commentary critical and explanatory of the whole Bible by Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, a very conservative commentary. And they evidently believe that Paul, or they knew that Paul spoke Hebrew. It says this, if we can pull this up, we see that the Hebrew for veil is radid. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. Hopefully I am. But subjection is a similar word, spelled the same, but it's pronounced differently, radad. This conservative commentary realized Paul was a Jew and that he may have been speaking Hebrew originally. The Hebrew, they point out, is spelled resh dalet, and can be pronounced two different ways with two different meanings. It's like the scripture of a camel going through the eye of a needle, Matthew 19 and verse 24. Again, I say to you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of Yahweh. The Semitic language writes gemel, mem, lamed, aleph for camel, or for heavy rope, because they can be the word can be pronounced two different ways. Gamala or Gamla, both having two different meanings. And it appears to make better sense to translate heavy rope or just rope than camel. A rope going through the eye of a needle makes more sense than a camel going through. It just does. There's other words like this, and so as you go through studies, it's brought out, and there are a number of people that have seen this and have pointed it out. So if we look at the sentence again and insert veil as in head covering, since this is the subject of headship, and we also take out the helper words such as symbol of, we find it reads as follows. 1 Corinthians 11:10. Therefore the woman ought to have a veil on her head because of angels. This is where we get into the heavenly part or the spiritual aspect of this. Now, a comment about this verse comes from Ryrie's Study Bible, which says, the insubordination of an uncovered woman, signifying her refusal to recognize the authority of her husband, would offend the angels who observe the conduct of believers in their assembly gatherings. Now, it's interesting that he should mention authority of her husband, but the verse doesn't say anything about husbands. We find some helper words that I think has confused this commentator, and he's relating it to husbands, but the scripture is void of that word. Remember, we're talking about headship and order. It literally reads, and if we were to go to the Hebrew, evidently it reads, the woman ought to have a veil on her head because of the order of headship. But it's also because of angels. Let's look at 13 through 15 of 1 Corinthians 11. Judge for yourself. Is it proper for a woman to pray to Yahweh with her head uncovered? Does not even nature or creation, you know, itself teach you that a man has, if a man has long hair, it is a dishonor to him. But if a woman has long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given to her for a covering. Oh, so the hair is the covering. This gets back to the idea Paul was relating about how shameful it would be for a woman to have her hair shaved. But here he says it's a covering. Or does he? Raris points out the following. This is not the same word used in verses 5 through 6. The point here is that as the hair represents the proper covering in the natural realm, so the veil is the proper covering in the religious. And I think he's right. The word for covering in verse 15 has more of meaning of frame, like a frame to show the face, or mantle, rather than a covering as like covering for the head, which the other word does definitely have that meaning. And so this gets into some word study. But in the Greek, unlike Hebrew or Aramaic, it's more precise in the word meanings. And this may be the very reason, or one of the very reasons, why Yahweh has allowed us to have the majority of the New Testament presented in the Greek language today. But the fact remains, the false idea of Paul describing women's hair being her covering is not correct, because he says it's a shame for a man's head to be covered. If he had meant that the woman's hair is a covering, then he's instructing men to have their heads shaved of all their hair. The arguments given by Paul for head coverings is the headship order, the creation or nature of things, and angels. None of these reasons are for the social customs of the time. In all of this, it needs to be made clear that when talking about head coverings, we are talking about just that. It can be a veil, but not for the face. It can be a hat, but it should be in good taste. Not the kind of hats we saw at the last royal wedding in England this year. Those are pretty flamboyant, pretty, what's the word, gaudy. And that's not what we want. And while appropriate for prayer, Bible study, or regular Sabbath services, Paul's wording doesn't tell the women to wear their head coverings all the time, just for the times that are associated with worship in prayer. And certainly this would be a proper thing to do at a Bible study. Now, if men want to wear hats outside of worship, that's fine. Same with women. But Paul points out that it is not proper for men among the brethren to do so in worship. No matter what reason they come up with, it doesn't work. And I think this is why we have a pretty good sizable section in Scripture about head covering. Men are not to wear the wrong tradition of the prayer shawl over their head in worship or in prayer, and the same goes for any type of hat, cap, that would cover their head. In fact, there are a number of areas in Scripture where we could look where it was a shameful thing for a man to wear his to wear a covering over his head. It was a mournful thing, in fact. King David did this. And so, well, when his son Absalom came against him, not only was the king in mourning, but also his men, and they covered their heads in shame and disgrace. just like the Apostle Paul said concerning men wearing head coverings. Coincidence? I don't think so. Paul was in line with Scripture, even though some say he wasn't. There are good and bad traditions today concerning head coverings. The ones that are outside of Yahweh's will are the bad traditions. The ones that are inside Yahweh's word are good traditions and good for us.